Okay, good morning. It's about time to get started this morning. Justin's got the handouts this morning. It's only one page today. We have a very short lesson today. May get through a little early. We got something else we'll do if we do that. I am scheduled to be out of town Wednesday night, and Freddie will be taking the class. So you get one good class this quarter and a half. All right, we're in chapters 20 and 21 this morning of Genesis. We'll back up and do some review stuff. What we used to do before that to kind of get cranked up and get our mind back where we left off last time. Get into that. Back it up to chapter 18 and 19 we had Wednesday night. So we'll run back through those as we go through our study of the book of Genesis. Abraham now is 99 years old. Chapter 18, and three strangers come up to where he is, his camp there, and he offers some refreshments, washes their feet, gets some refreshments, gets some rest while he prepares a meal for them. He goes there to get a meal and make a cake, goes out, kills a heifer and brings it to them, and feeds them, stands by while they eat, and they tell him that this time next year, Sarah will have a son. And of course, think about the age they are now, well past the age of childbearing. So Sarah then laughs with, and Freddie pointed out Wednesday night, within herself. She didn't laugh out loud. She laughed within herself. We don't know why. Is it because of the long delay here, that old age, that's her fate that begins to waver or whatever. But whatever it was, the announcement itself was incredible, no doubt about that. But then the question came up, is anything too hard for the Lord? Is anything that God can't do? If he wanted to have a child at old age, certainly he could. And we looked at Elizabeth and Mary as in contrast there with things that God had did, even with childbirth there. Then two of the strangers leave and go on to Sodom, and one stays and talks with Abraham. And what he tells Abraham is that Sodom is about to be destroyed. The sin there is so great, the wickedness is so great, that he cries, come up to God, and he's going to destroy the city. And of course, they know that Lot is there. And we ask the question, is God's action justified? Well, Abraham starts negotiating with God. He knows Lot's there. So he asked, would we destroy it if there's 50 righteous souls there? See, we know Sodom is very wicked, but if there are 50 righteous souls there, would you wipe them out? Would you destroy them for the city? And God says, no, for 50, I wouldn't do it. So Abraham comes down to 45, then to 40, then to 30, then to 20, then to 10. For 10 righteous souls, would you spare the city? And God said he would. So, showing his mercy on those who were there. But, of course, there were not 10 righteous souls there. You've got to go back and think about chapter 13, which is only the second chapter into the patriarch time here. When Abraham and Lot separated, Lot made his choice and pitched his tent and went towards Sodom. And the verse there, last part of the verse says, even at that time, the wickedness was great in Sodom. So it's not like it was something new. Wicked back then, and Lot has been moving toward it now, of course, it's in the city. The strangers come, two of them come into Sodom, Lot sitting there in the gate, and he greets them, bows down to them, and invites them into his home to spend the night. He shows them the same similar type of hospitality to what Abraham had showed to the three of them when they were there at his place. Then, of course, the men of the city, being the wicked, wicked people they are, and of course, their sin is homosexuality, they come into Lot's house. The men of the city, both young and old, it says, and they want the men to come out so they can have such a relationship with them. Lot then offers his two virgin daughters, to the men of the city instead of these strangers who are on his roof. And then we ask the question then, how is this justified? Two evils there, if the men did that to the strangers, or if Lot sent his daughters out, either one. And when that choice comes up to us, we have two choices and both are wrong. We can't choose either. You got to trust in God and do what's right. You can't give one bad choice to take the place of another bad choice. So Lot's daughter said he tried to sanctify or justify or reason that the improper means used, giving his daughters to these men, would come out good at the end by saving the strangers from what these men wanted to do to them. So then, moving on, God then decides to destroy the city. He rains down fire and brimstone from heaven and overthrew the cities, including all the vegetation around them, all this, everything in the plains down there. He's anxious. Allah, Abraham's very anxious about this. He knows Lot's in the city, what happened to him. The strangers had taken Lot and his wife and his two daughters by the hand, led them out of town, and said, go, flee. And he asked them to go to the city of Zoar, and they permitted that. It was there, and they really go to the mountains then. We had another bad situation come up where Lot's daughters then, again, attempted to justify the fact that they need to have children for them to keep the lineage of their father going. They got him drunk with wine 2 nights in a row, one later than one night, one the other night. And from the older daughter, we have the Moabites, and from the younger daughter, the Ammonites, two of the tribes that will come into play as we go on through the history of here. So then the question comes up again. Did the end result, that of having the children to carry on the lineage of Lot, does that justify the means of sinful action of getting them there? And if so, when? And of course, the answer is never. Never is it wrong to do sin in order to accomplish something that might be good on the other end of it. It's always wrong. We talked about several applications that might apply to that. So, summarizing the two chapters, remember Lot left Abraham's influence, moved to the city of Sodom, and the wickedness there was great. God knew it was great. The judgment of God's coming on them, and yet he showed his mercy. I will not bestow it for 50, for 45, for 40, down even to 10. Showing mercy there, and then he has the mercy to send the strangers to take Lot and his family out of the city. And then we talk about the sins of Lot and his daughters. So that's kind of a quick summary of 18 and 19 that we talked about on this slide. All right, getting into this morning's chapter 20 and 21. A big couple of places on here. This is the top part of the Dead Sea. So Jerusalem's going to be off up here somewhere. At the top of the Dead Sea. This is the area we talked about was probably not even underwater at that time. Here's Zoar, possible sites of Sodom and Gomorrah are down here. We're going to be over in this area today. Here's Gera, which Abraham is when this chapter opens. Hagar's going to roam around this area down through here. And here's Beersheba. We'll talk about that later on. All this is down in the southern part of the land. The common expression, if you're talking about the entire land, would be from Dan in the north to Beersheba in the south. This is on the southern border of the land of Canaan here. That's kind of the map area we'll be in again this morning. So we'll talk about Abimelech this morning. Abimelech was the king of Gera, that city we just looked at on there. And he sees Abraham and Sarah living in his area. And Abraham is telling that Sarah is his sister. If you look, it goes back later on, we'll find in this chapter here. This goes back way back. This plan had been made way back that we'll have this agreement that anywhere we go, you tell that you're my sister. So Abraham's concerned about his wife. And so they make this pact that they will always tell that she is his sister. And this is the second time we know that we have recorded it, where he's used that here. So because his sister, not a married woman, he takes her in to be his wife. And God, in a dream, warns Abimelech. Says, this is a married woman that you have here. Now, Abimelech says, wait a minute, I haven't touched her. God says, I know, I kept you from touching her. I'm innocent. I haven't done anything here. So jump off and raise this question then. Are we guilty when somebody else tells a lie that causes us to do wrong? What if Abimelech had been with Sarah, thinking she was his sister, and had done wrong because of it, because she was with another man's wife? So, are we guilty of sin when we sin based on somebody else's deception? So, think about these these things. Go back to Satan lying to Eve. She was guilty, and she chose to eat of the fruit when she had been lied to, right? Well, think about farther on, if you remember the story of the old prophet, young prophet? The young prophet was told to go speak to him and don't go back a different way, don't eat, and all this kind of stuff. And the old prophet came in and said, I've had a different revelation, and God said, you come eat with me. And then what happened to the young prophet when he left? Killed the lions, okay, but he had not done what God said. So here's two cases of where people were lied to, did wrong, and were punished because of it. So we have to be careful about that. So we are guilty. If somebody deceives us, and yet we do wrong because of it. So just that thought we go through here. So since he now knows that this is Abraham's wife and not his sister, he calls for Abraham to come in and says, what is this you've done to me? He has fear come from Abraham because I almost did something wrong here. I didn't mean to. You deceived me, Abraham. Why did you do this? So he offers him Abraham says, well, she really is my sister. She's my half-sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not of my mother. So had the same father, but two different mothers. So Abraham was talking about earlier, a half-wife, if you will, but wrong. So he brings a sacrifice, a bunch of money, and slaves and animals and things to give Abraham to vindicate, to give her back to him for that. And then Sarah's rebuked because of it. Yes. So he says, Abraham tells Abimelech, Abraham's a prophet. He'll pray for you, and this will be over and put behind you. So Abraham does. And keep the point here again. Lying is never justified. So Abraham was wrong in doing this. Even though he was trying to protect his life, he thinks lying is wrong. We've talked about this point several times before when lying has come up. So that's pretty much chapter 20. Comments about that from anybody before we get on to the 21 and, yeah, yes, Mike. Only when the heart is directed to hope, you know, from the scripture. Study the scripture, Mike, saying, get that in our hearts. Then we can act on what our heart says based on what God tells us. Don't just act on what we think is right because that's what I think I ought to be doing. Good point. All right, say it again. God says, the rebuke he gave Abimelech because of this was what? You're a dead man. If you touched her, you've been a dead man. So I kept you from touching her because of that. So it was serious. Okay, we're in chapter 21 now. Time has come to fulfill that promise that the strangers had made to him, to them. Justice was told by that. Sarah has a son for Abraham in her old age, or his old age, both of his old age. And according to what God had told him to do, back a few chapters back, when he gave him circumcision, on the eighth day, as it was prescribed by God, on the eighth day, God took Isaac and circumcised him, as every man in his house was to be. Abraham's 100 years old now. And the verse here says, who would have thought that Sarah would have nursed children? And it was something that she was not expecting to do, having been barren all these 99 years up to this point here when she did this. So when Isaac is finally weaned, Abraham makes a great feast because of his son. Now he has that son of promise they've been looking for because it will not be Ishmael, but the promises will come through. It will be your own son. It will be Isaac, given to him by Sarah, not Ishmael from the handmaid. The birth of Isaac. But that brings on some problems. So Sarah now observes Ishmael, who is how much older than Isaac? 13 years, 14 years, okay? So he was born in, Abraham was 86, 14 years old, I guess. 14 years difference. Ishmael, just old enough to give Isaac problems here. See, Sarah sees Ishmael scoffing and making fun of him, and she wants them gone. And she's already sent him back. She's already left one time. Angel told her to go back. But now she wants them gone. Let's take her gone and Ishmael gone out of their lives because she has her own son now. Now, this displeased Abraham. And you think about why. Who is Ishmael to Abraham? It's his son. Okay. So she wants to send away Hagar and Abraham's actual son. He wasn't the son of promise, it was still his son. So that displeased Abraham, but God told him to do it. He said, go ahead and do what she said. Because the blessing is through Isaac, not through Ishmael. So I'll make a great nation out of it, out of Ishmael, but that's not the son of promise. So this again is the area where she's going to be moving as she travels around in here. So it's interesting here. Think about a jump ahead a little bit when God tells Abraham later on to go and offer a sacrifice for Isaac. How much indication do we have there of how much time did Abraham delay before he went to offer Isaac? Like none. Just until Abraham got up the next morning and went and did it. And it's the same phrase is used here. God told Abraham on this day to send them out. Isaac's the son of promise. Send Hagar and Ishmael away. And then Abraham rose early the next day. He started making preparation for that. He prepared some food and some water and puts it on her shoulder, and sends them away. And she traveled out in the desert down here and the water runs out after some period of time. And so she places the boy over under some shade she finds there and she goes away from him. She says, I can't afford to stand there and watch him die. So that she's waiting for him to die, but she places some distance between herself and him because she doesn't want to just watch him die. We cannot understand that. But who intervenes now? God does, through an angel. Okay. So an angel called out to her and said, I'm going to make a great nation of Israel. He's not going to die. He's going to pass and give a great nation. And so the angel then provides food and water for them, and Ishmael grows up in the desert, becomes an archer, and Hagar takes a wife from him, an Egyptian wife. I got asked the question on the paper there, why an Egyptian wife? How would that be? What she might get? What nationality was Hagar? She was an Egyptian. And think about the proximity to when they're up in this area up here on the map. Egypt's down here, you know, close that way. So trade routes will come through there, that part. So she takes an Egyptian wife for Ishmael. And that kind of ends that little segment of her, of Ishmael and Hagar being sent away. Then we get back to Abraham and Abimelech again. Now they start having a problem over some wells of water here. But notice this observation that Abimelech makes about Abraham. He says, God is with you in all that you do. God is with you in all that you do. Because of this, I want you to be kind to my offspring. I want you to treat my descendants kindly as I have treated you kindly. Work with Abraham. Abraham agrees to that. They make a covenant over that. There's a well of water there that's given some problems there. Abraham says, why did your servants fill up the well that I dug? Abraham says, I didn't know anything about that till today. You just told me about it first I knew about it. But they agree to a treaty over that, and they bring sacrifices and offer them to seal this agreement, this covenant they have here. And the place there is called Beersheba, where they do that. And that's the point. The place you pointed out on the map a few minutes ago. But that's where they swore the oath there. So this agreement that they have, the observation about Abraham, and then the wells of water and the agreement they make over that. So, a couple of thoughts about the lesson today. And you may have some, we'll talk about that. We talk about lying never being justified. We've seen that several times in the class already this quarter. A couple of passages here to think about that. from Proverbs here. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord. Not just in Abraham's time, but always. God delights in those who tell the truth. Colossians 3:9, don't lie to one another. So, lying is wrong. We teach our children that. We practice that ourselves. I remember that. Then I'm going to spend a couple of minutes here on this phrase that Abimelech used about Abraham. He said, God is with you in all that you do. Okay? I think that was something observable that Abimelech had noticed about Abraham. He observed the way he was treated, the way Abraham acted, that God was with him. Abraham was a faithful man, and God blessed him because of it. There's something different about Abraham that made Abimelech notice this. He wanted to be friends with him because of it. So, the question then about us, is there something observable about us in our lives that makes us different, that people around us see us based on our actions, that we are somebody different, that they see God's actions in us, and say we're blessed by God because of who we are. Something different about us. And I've got several passages here. I'll just run through them that talk about our actions and how we are and how we act, and it would make us different so people would see God through us, living in us. The first thing is very familiar verse, let your light so shine. Then they see your good works and glorify God. So we should be broadcasting out this light that people see us, not to go see our good works and glorify us, but see our good works and glorify God. Titus 2:7. You yourselves must be an example to them by doing good works of every kind. So we do good works for the example of people around us. Everything you do reflects the integrity and seriousness of your teaching. And several little pieces here from 1 Corinthians, verse from chapter 11, verse 1. The imitators of me as I am of Christ. Do that, people are going to see God living in us, be observable in us. Chapter 4, verse 1. It's how one should regard us as servants of Christ and stewards of the mystery of God. They should be able to see that we are servants of Christ and the way we live, the way we act. And from chapter 13, verse 1, I speak with tongues of men and angels. They'll have love. And it's a clanging noise. Colossians 3, verse 7. Whatever you do in word or deed, all in the name of the Lord Jesus. Give thanks to God and the Father by him. And then from Galatians 5:22, the fruit of the Spirit here, familiar passage again. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith. The kind of things that should be in us, that people would see us and then want to be with us, want to be friends with us because they see that God is blessing us because of the actions, because of the life we live. Okay. What a mess. Somebody got thoughts? Yeah, I meant to point that out. Thank you again. Yeah, let's go back to that map 1 minute if I can get back there right quick. Right here. All right. Right up here is the edge of the Mediterranean Sea. Okay, that curve, it comes down through here. We start to go off toward Egypt over here. And this whole coastal plain area here, what we're just talking about, this whole area here is where the Philistines live. These are Philistine cities later on. This whole territory here. And the Philistines, of course, will be a foreign Israelite side for much time to come. All the way up to the time of David, of course, Goliath. Oh yeah, very much so. Okay, anybody else? Okay, Scott, go ahead. fellow. Okay. Hope you didn't hear all that Scott said. I'll try to go through it again. Think about when Abraham and Lot had separated. Large companies, both of them. Remember, Abraham had 318 trained servants to go out and take Lot back when he got captured. So Lot had a substantial number of people that would have moved with him down toward Sodom when he went that way. And yet when it comes into this time for God to go and show mercy on the city, he got down to 10 righteous souls. They couldn't find 10 righteous souls there. Out of all the company that went with Lot down there, we had to assume there were servants that went with him, but they had large herds. You know, we had servants there out keeping his flocks. Both his servants and Abraham's servants were quarreling. So out of all this, there still couldn't be found 10 righteous souls. And if you start adding up the ones that he should have direct influence on, the ones close to him, with his daughters and future son-in-laws and the sons-in-law and the keeper of his herd and things like this, there still weren't 10 righteous souls. So it seems as though at least this company had all been caught up in the wickedness of the city, perhaps. That's kind of the conclusion you might come to there. And even Lot, when it came down to the point we made earlier, when Lot came to making a choice between doing right or doing right, he didn't do right. He chose the wrong choice there. So that's Scott's whole point, is the influence, the major influence of wickedness in the world around us. It'll consume us and eat us up. We don't watch out for it. Okay. Just one stop. Thanks. God didn't destroy the earth again with water like he said he wouldn't. But he sure took care of that one place there. It was so wicked. Okay. Jeremy, I'm flipping slides around. Got a little time left this morning. I knew this was a little short this morning. I want to run through something else with you right quick. Remember all the time that Tim spent going through the different periods of Bible history? And everybody keep in mind, we talk about the 17 periods of Bible history. That thing's not a magic number. It could be 18 or 20 or 12 or 11. That's just the number that we picked to work with here. But this is a little different approach to it. And we're going to go through it here, the periods of Bible history. Let's do it all in maps. With the maps. The reason I do this, we need to all be able to, as different things come up through the time of Bible history, put a picture in our mind on the map that says, where was that? Where was that going on? Where did it happen? Well, that was right here. Oh, that was, I guess, that map is visualized in our mind up there, if you will. So we start off here with the period before the flood, and this is the supposed site of the Garden of Eden, where that's determined to think it might be. It's down in this area of the Mesopotamia Valley here. We talked about that. That covers Genesis 1 through 5. And then as you go on then to the flood period, Genesis 6 through 10, and a picture of the water coming in and covering up the earth there. With that, and then after the flood, the ark lands on the mountains of Ararat, which means, as we tell it, the north of that. So can I get that map in your mind? Let's go through there. And then the scattering of the people, they return and come back down to the land of Shinar, which is this area down in here. Okay, so that's chapter 11. And then we come into Abraham, the patriarch, the fourth period here. And it's going to start off down in Ur. course, it goes up to Haran, and then from there down into the land of Canaan, and down into Egypt, because of the famine. That's where he lied about his wife the first time. And then, of course, comes back up and lives in this area here in Canaan. And then the patriarchs then are Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's what we'll study about this quarter here. And then Joseph is the piece that gets us down into Egypt. He's sold into slavery there, and the people moved down there. And then Pharaoh rises up later on. It doesn't know Joseph. Now 400 years have passed. Moses comes on the scene, the 10 plagues, and then finally Pharaoh says, go, get out of here, and they go down to Mount Sinai. And this is where then the nation promise has been fulfilled. They have the covenant, the law, the priesthood, and the tabernacle all at this point here. So get this in your mouth, in your mind here. Now they're going to leave Mount Sinai, go up to Kadesh, where the spies are sent out, and because of their foreign spies, they get 40 years of wandering in the wilderness. And various things happen during that time. Moses and Miriam both die. We have the sin of Miriam and Aaron die first. Moses sin, Balak and Balaam. So the stories that goes on there. Joshua then is appointed to take Moses' place. Then they, after wandering for 40 years, they come up and they conquer the east side of the Jordan. And Moses then goes to Mount Nebo where he looks in and sees the land, dies there, and Joshua now is the leader rather than take them into the promised land. So as they come to the land, the invasion and conquest, then it goes into three campaigns, the central part first, the southern part second, and then they get the northern part up there. They conquer the land now. And the land's divided between the tribes, and the land promise is fulfilled. Two out of the three promises of Abraham are now fulfilled. And then we come to the period of the judges. So they're in the land now. They got some kind of ruler, if you will, there. And that goes on with the recycling of the repression, the rebellion, the repression, the repentance and the rescue of God with the judges. They come up and say, we want a king. Be like the nations around about us. So then that brings up the United Kingdom, with Saul, David, and Solomon. Three kings there. Then the kingdom divides to the north and the south. Israel in the north, the 10 tribes, Jeroboam is king, and all the kings of the north are always evil. There was no good king in the north ever recorded. Judah's in the south, the 2 tribes. Rehoboam is the first king, and there are some good kings there. Many of them are wicked, but there are a few good kings in the south. Then Israel is taken away into Assyrian captivity. And think about Nineveh. We're back over there on the Tigris River, 721. That leaves now Judah alone, with Israel gone. That lasted from 721 to 586. Then they're taken away also back up the same direction, but this time into Babylonian captivity. They go off in waves, in groups. They don't all go at once. But the total period that you're gone there is 70 years. That was prophesied, they fulfilled. That's the captivity period. And then we have the return from captivity, coming back to the land of Canaan, the promised land, and coming back again in waves. Zerubbabel came back, Ezra and Nehemiah, each with a different task that they were to do, and restoring the worship of the walls and the temple. Then, at the years of silence came in, the person, Amos 8:11, a famine from hearing the word of God, and that brings up then. Well, I meant to have a statue. I thought I had a statue there. The statue from Daniel chapter 2 that links us across that period of history and years of silence. So the beginning of the life of Christ then, and 7 pieces that we used in the life of Christ, 7 periods there, 30 years, years of preparation, as he was, before he went up and was baptized by John. Again in the ministry, in the great Galilean ministry, moved to the north part of Palestine, and then periods of retirement, and then, of course, the close of the ministry, and then his last week, and then his death, and his resurrection, and exaltation. So then that brings us into the time of the early church, and the gospel spreads first to Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and it just starts moving out from there, and that goes up through about Acts 11 or 12. And then also start spreading out as a missionary journey start, first to the Asia Minor area there, and then we get the second journey, and we get across the Aegean Sea, going into the Greece area over there. Paul, Silas, Timothy, Luke are the ones traveling around spreading the gospel up here now, and the letters to Christians, the time frame, and then it goes on to Rome as Paul goes there, and we have the letters written then by Peter, Paul, James, and Jude, and John. So that's just kind of a quick run through the maps. And I'd like everybody to be able to picture that time in maps as you go through that. Where this event going on? There's a map. I can see it right there in my head of where it was. I've done this with the kids a bunch of times as I've gone through this, just to get those maps just good in their mind. Okay, anything else? We got a couple of minutes. We've just got chapters 22 and 23 for Wednesday night. Read those chapters. It doesn't take but 10 minutes to read through these chapters. Do them two or three times. So you're familiar with them. I know that Wednesday night. I'll be gone. Be back next Sunday morning if all goes well. Thank you.